Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, a listener-supported ministry. In fact, thank you so much for being part of that support for James Dobson Family Institute.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and as you may already know, Family Talk is a listener-supported division of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. In uncertain times like these, we want you to know that Dr. Dobson remains the voice you trust for the family you love. Thanks so much for standing with us. Proverbs 16, verse 3 says, "Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and He will establish your plans." Ever since he was a young man, our guest today has been trying to live by the words of that proverb, and today you'll hear the conclusion of Dr. Dobson's encouraging conversation with this guy, beloved retired pro football coach Tony Dungy. Tony Dungy is a New York Times best-selling author, former NFL head coach for the Indianapolis Colts and Tampa Bay Buccaneers. In 2007, he became the first African-American coach to lead his team to a Super Bowl victory. Then in 2016, Coach Dungy was enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. Tony Dungy is widely considered by NFL players, both current and retired, as one of the most knowledgeable, well-liked, and respected coaches to ever walk the sidelines. The question is, why? Well, outside of football, Coach Dungy is heavily involved in numerous organizations, including the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, All-Pro Dad, and the Prison Crusade Ministry. Tony Dungy retired from coaching in 2008 and now serves as an analyst for NBC's Football Night in America. He and his wife, Lauren, are the parents of 10 children. Back in 2005, Tony and Lauren Dungy tragically lost their 18-year-old son to suicide. That must be one of the most difficult things a family can ever endure. Dr. Dobson and Tony Dungy will talk briefly about that on today's program, as well as tackling the questions of what it really means to be a man and what true biblical masculinity really looks like. You'll want to listen closely to what they have to say. Let's go there right now.
We had a great visit with Tony Dungy on our last broadcast. He's a man that I have great admiration for. He's a gentleman and a great role model for men. He's written a new book now called Uncommon, Finding Your Path to Significance. And we're going to talk about what it means to take an uncommon path through life with our visit today. Tony was the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts for a number of years. They won the Super Bowl in 2007. And in fact, Tony was here shortly after that. And upon his retirement, he was the winningest coach in the team's history, and he was a very successful coach in Tampa Bay before that. His teams almost always reached the playoffs. Well, Coach, we're delighted to have you back, and we talked quite a bit, and I almost threw the whole program last time about football because I'm a kind of a rabid
football
fan, the teams that you fielded in the last few years there in Indianapolis are just models of how I think the game ought to be played. But let's turn the corner and talk today a little bit about your family and about your father. You talk a lot about your dad in here and what he did for you. What was his profession and how was that impact made?
My dad was a school teacher, and he taught junior college science, and he was a tremendous man.
And it was physiology.
Physiology. Yeah. He had a PhD, but he never introduced himself as Dr. Dungy. Most people that met him, Lovie Smith, the coach of the Bears, knew him for 8 years, and he said, "I never knew your dad had a PhD." Yeah. But he would just come in and have conversations because he enjoyed people. But he was special, and he told me early on that his joy was seeing students do well. And I knew I wanted to be in some profession that helped people because that's what I saw my dad do. He started out teaching in the separate but equal in the early 1950s. So he taught in segregated schools. And his motto was that you don't worry about the problem so much as you worry about the solution. And he was just a great role model, and I learned stuff from him very early on. And when I was 48 years old coaching for the Colts, I would still ask him questions about, hey, this situation, how would you handle it? What do you think?
He has gone on to be with the Lord. Was he Christian?
Passed away from leukemia. It was just kind of unbelievable circumstance where healthy, 78 years old, swimming 6 miles a day, and you know, just the Lord let me know that you can't take anything for granted. Yes,
but he did have a deep committed faith.
Yeah, his actually his dad was the minister in our family.
Is that
yeah,
right?
My grandfather, and that's where I kind of got my background from. My grandfather was the Baptist minister, and my mom ended up teaching Sunday school.
What kind of mother was she?
My mother was great. She was a teacher also, and she taught public speaking and Shakespeare. And they were elective courses, so anybody in the school system could have Mrs. Dungy if they wanted to. And I still get letters from people that say, I had your mom for public speaking, and if I hadn't had her in 10th grade, I wouldn't be at the job I'm at now, standing up in front of people and things. She had a tremendous impact on her students. She was an encourager. She was very, very special.
How many children were there?
There were four children. My oldest sister is a nurse, and then I have a younger brother and sister who are twins. My younger sister is a doctor who does high-risk pregnancies, and my younger brother's a dentist. So they all kind of took the science background from my dad.
There was a boy?
Yeah,
one boy, younger
brother.
Did he play football?
Played football, enjoyed it, but his passion, again, was helping people. And he ended up going on to become a dentist and is fabulous.
Yeah. Were you a superstar in high school?
Other people would say that, yes.
you're too humble to admit it.
As a matter of fact, I grew up in Michigan, and I was recruited by your favorite school, USC. So
that's the only thing you've said so far I disagree with. You didn't take it. You had an opportunity to be a Trojan.
I had a chance
to
be a Trojan.
And you went to Minnesota.
I went to Minnesota.
Oh, my. I wish I could have talked to you.
Well, it's a different era now. You can get back and forth a lot. The West Coast seemed so far at that time.
Yeah.
But Coach McKay was an icon at the time, and they were winning championships. And I had fantasies of going there, but ended up staying a little closer to home.
So the character that you admire so in others was really, it really began at home in what you were taught and the modeling of your parents.
It really did. And I think the biggest blessing that the Lord gave me was those two parents and they teaching us respect at a very early age, teaching us about the Lord, teaching us that you could do whatever you wanted, not to let anything stand in your way of chasing your dreams. But more than anything, that respect for the Lord, and that came very, very early in our lives.
How early did you give your heart to the Lord?
You know, I accepted Christ as a very little boy. You know, everyone kind of around my house did, and you thought that was the right thing to do, and they said, if you want to go to heaven, you have to accept Christ. So as the Savior, I did early. But then I got to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I was 21 years old, and there were a group of guys who were dynamic Christian guys who really, their Christianity permeated everything that they did, on the field, off the field, at home, every day. And I said, wow, this is what this is all about. And they kind of encouraged me to get involved in the Bible studies and the chapel services. And the more I read, the more I began to understand that it's putting the Lord first. It's letting him direct you in everything. And so I think that's when I really began growing as a Christian at 21.
Well, the name of your book is Uncommon, Finding Your Path to Significance. And you write about a lot of family-related subjects in here, and one of them is parenting, and you speak on that subject. What do you tell parents?
Well, I tell parents, number one, is you just have to be involved. So many of the young men that I talk to now, my dad wasn't there, so my mom had to work a couple of jobs. She was working hard. She did as well as she could, but they really didn't have that involvement that our parents had. And kids don't need all the best things. We always want to give them better than what we had. But what they need is our availability, us being there, and us showing them the right way to go. And kids are looking for that, and we've got to do a better job of providing that direction.
What does it mean to be a man? You talked about it here. What is a man? Let's suppose I'm 21 years of age now, and I'm looking to you for leadership in my life and influence. You've become a mentor to me. And I say, I really don't know what a man is. How do I find masculinity?
Masculinity, I think, hasn't been shown the right way in our media, in our movies, in our television. It hasn't necessarily been shown the right way, even by our men. Masculinity is standing up for what you know is right. It's guiding your family and your community the right way, and being a person who follows the Lord, but not following the crowd. That's probably the biggest message in this book, Uncommon, that I wanted to get across to young men. It's easy to just follow the crowd and do what everybody else is doing, but that doesn't make you a man.
You know, one of the things that irritates me as much as anything I can think of is the way maleness is represented in the popular culture. If you just look at the sitcoms night after night, the men are bumbling fools. They're adolescent crazies. And the women are the ones that are in positions of leadership, and the women are respectful, and the women are beautiful. And, you know, it just makes me sick to see them tear down what it means to be a man. I think you're absolutely right in this book. Young men are struggling with this. They don't know what they're supposed to be.
We don't, and because those male figures aren't always there, then it becomes a thing, well, outward toughness is how you become a man. And you're not a man if you show emotion. You're not a man if you have feelings. You're not a man if you're afraid of anything. You've got to be the roughest, toughest guy. And so if you're not the roughest, toughest, then you better get some type of weapon that can be tough for you and be a substitute toughness. And that's what we're teaching guys, instead of saying, you know what? Being part of a family, loving a woman, taking care of her, yes, sometimes being afraid, there's nothing wrong with that.
I would like to give an example of a man who knew what it meant to be manly. And I've got his voice on a CD. Now, I'm not going to tell you who he is. I'm going to see if you recognize. Okay. I'm going to put you on the spot
all
here.
Right.
This is tough because it could be anybody. But let's hear the first clip from this individual.
Because I think life really, Dr. Dobson, is really a matter of priorities. I mean, what you consider most real and valuable in your life is your religion. It doesn't necessarily have to be God. It can be your job. It can be your family. It can be anything. And so I knew that football was my whole priority up until that point. But once I accepted Christ, then football took... Actually, God and football switched places, you know, because God became first. My family was always in my life, too. And of course, the football took the last part. And I think St. Augustine said it so well when he says, "Hearts are restless, O God, until we find our rest in Thee." What a great quote, because it speaks to me. That spoke to me at that time.
Coach, when we were listening to that clip, you muttered Joe Gibbs, the former NFL football coach for the Redskins, but it's not.
It is Tom Landry.
And it two was men Tom Landry.
The
we
same,
both got
yes,
fooled. Yeah,
two men of the same
yeah.
character. And Coach Landry, both of them, Coach Landry and Coach Gibbs, were role models for me. But Tom Landry, I think, very early on let people know that you could be successful and follow the Lord. And those type of men are so important. As we were talking about what true manhood is, what a coach is, that was Coach Landry.
You remind me a lot of him.
A lot of people say
do.
That.
Right, and, because the demeanor, the softness, yet the strength. In fact, your first book was called Quiet Strength, and that is very well named. But Tom Landry had it too, didn't he?
He had it. Yes, he did, and he demonstrated it. And was very, very important, I think, for a lot of people of my age to be able to see that.
Let's hear the other clip also by Tom Landry.
I think that sometimes it's hard for us in a secular world to realize that there is a secular society and there is a Christian society, which God says, you know, we're not of this world. Jesus said it, we're not of this world as Christian. And what I've seen and what I feel is made America great is that it has God and country in mind. The family was a hallmark, you know, of America. That's what made America what it is today. It had a value system, and that's what we lack today. We don't have value, and our youngsters aren't learning the value system, and they don't have self-esteem. They don't have a family around them, and that's where you gain it. A family and a church is where you gain the values that made America great.
Hmm. Coach Landry has been gone for many years now, but what he is saying there is why I'm concerned about this country, because those things are breaking down.
I agree, and it's so funny because people ask me all the time, are the guys that you coach, are they different? Are they different? This is Coach Landry from a generation ago saying the same things that we're saying today, and somehow we've got to stop this momentum. We've got to get back to the values. We've got to teach that as much as we're teaching athleticism and football.
Well, you know, the family is under attack. Even its very definition is being changed. And then you mentioned last time that 3 out of 4 players that come into the NFL as rookies did not have fathers at home. And so this no longer characterizes this country.
I would agree with that, and somehow we've got to fix that, and we've got to be that role model for the young men that don't have it and encourage them.
Mm. Another subject that you dealt with in the book is how to treat a woman. Tell us about it.
Well, because of the lack of family structure, I think we have a generation of young men that really have never seen that. They haven't seen how their father treated their mother, how you're supposed to. So they don't have a basis for it.
How'd your dad treat your mother?
My dad treated my mother with great respect. And my dad made sure that as kids, we never raised our voice at our mom. We didn't disrespect our mom. That was important to him. And I think that's the first lesson that you have to learn. And I think my dad being there was very important to me to see how to treat a woman. It was very important to my sisters to see what type of man they were going to look for as husbands.
After I was grown, in fact, I was 30 years of age, I got mildly irritated at my mother one day. And I was riding in the car with my dad. And I was just, you know, I was complaining about what she'd done. And my gentle dad looked at me with those steely blue eyes, and he said, "Listen, bud, she is the best friend you ever had, and don't you forget it." And when my dad called me bud, it was time to back off. I don't care what age I was.
Absolutely. You got those cold words, and my dad was the same way, that, hey, there are just certain things that we don't do. And disrespecting your mom or talking back to your mom, that's unacceptable. And you learn that early on.
Now, a lot of the kids that you dealt with on the football field are newly married or will be newly married. And I don't know how they have a clue as to what it means to be a husband and father, because they have never seen it.
Right. That was one of the reasons I used to take my wife, Lauren, to every away game, and she would ride on the plane with us. And she was a big football fan, and she enjoyed it. But part of my idea, I wanted to model that behavior, that here's your coach and here's his wife, and we are a unit, and we're together, because so many of those guys had not seen that or experienced it, and I wanted to show them how important that was.
Huh. What do you say to young men about marriage itself?
Try to talk to them about how important it is, about what commitment is all about. And it is easy to talk to them in football terms. Hey, you make a commitment to your team, we're going to stick together no matter what. No matter how many games we lose, we're in this together, and we're never going to turn our back on our teammates. You've got to have that same type of commitment with the young lady that you're dating, that is your fiance, and who you're going to be married to.
You have 5 children. You lost your son.
One. We had 6, 5 still living and prospering and growing from 24 years old to 2 and a half.
If you don't mind, I would like to ask you about the son that you lost. He committed suicide at 17?
18.
18 years of age. What did that do to you, and how did it come? You mind talking about that? Because that's got to be a painful subject.
It is a painful subject. I think I'd probably like to talk more about because of that, what is my message to young men?
All right.
Yeah, we lost a son at 18, and what it made me conscious of was that young men in this country do need direction. They do need guidance. They need help. And it probably made me more aware of reaching out to other young men to help them, because I think they are getting the wrong messages of what it means to be a man, what you have to do, what it's all about, and can you really find love, can you find happiness by making yourself vulnerable. And I think we've got to get that message to our young men that you can.
I think you said here that his sister said about him, if he could have lived two more years till he was 20, a lot of the things that agitated him would have started to come together and he would have understood better.
Yeah, our oldest daughter's 24 now, and she went through a period of time where she thought her parents were the worst people in the world, that they just infringed on her rights. She knew a lot of people and dated boys who were struggling with where they were going, and it just seems like after they got through college and got to that age that things started making a little more sense.
Daddy gets real smart.
Daddy gets a little smarter. The world makes a little more sense, and some of those values that you try to teach, they see the logic behind it as they get out into the real world.
Tony, are you enjoying your retirement, so to speak? I know you've got all you can handle on your plate, and that's why I appreciate so much you coming here and letting us talk to you about Uncommon. But you haven't looked back, right?
I have not looked back. I am enjoying it. It gives me a chance to do little projects that I would have never have gotten to do if I was coaching, going and speaking in prison, speaking in high schools, doing projects with young people. It's rewarding, and it's a different kind of reward than coaching in the National Football League, but it's one that I think the Lord's directing me to right now at this time in my life.
How much speaking are you doing?
Probably too much, but when you get a chance to go out and talk to people, and talk to young people especially, it's really been a lot of fun for me.
Coach Tony Dungy, I want to give you the greatest respect in a sentence that I can give you. If I had a son who played football, I would want him to play for you. I would want him under the influence of a person who had his values straight and who had really thought through the meaning of life and what it means to be a man especially.
Well, thank you. That's a great compliment, because that's the way I was coached. I coached the way I would want my son to be coached, and try to coach him on the field, but coach him into manhood off the field as well.
Consider yourself a friend, and always, always know that the red carpet is down for you here.
Well, thank you. We feel it every time we come, and it's just been a real, real pleasure to be here these 2 days.
And give my regards to Lauren.
Thank you. I will.
Okay.
That was a vulnerable and honest look into the life of beloved retired professional football coach and popular sports analyst Tony Dungy. Dr. Dobson has great respect for Tony Dungy and always is happy to catch up with him. To learn more about Tony Dungy and his ministry and his books, be sure to visit our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. Again, that web address is drjamesdobson.org/broadcast. Takes you right to our broadcast page. Or feel free to call us. Our number is 877-732-6825. Now, on today's program, Tony Dungy emphasized one point in particular, and that is, quite simply, don't just follow the crowd. As followers of Jesus Christ, we are called to a different standard. We are compelled to stand up for what is right, regardless of what culture says about what is popular. One way that the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute would like to help Christians do just that is through Dr. Dobson's monthly newsletter. Every month, Dr. Dobson sits down and pens a letter to his constituents about something that is on his heart. Sometimes it's a current events issue, other times an aspect of parenting or marriage. Often it's a personal story based upon his own life experiences, but it's always from a biblical perspective and aimed at informing, encouraging, and equipping today's families to live godly lives. To sign up for Dr. Dobson's newsletter, just give us a call, 877-732-6825. Thanks so much for listening to Family Talk today. We've been bringing you marriage and parenting advice and encouragement for over 10 years now. And Dr. Dobson has personally been with you without interruption on the air for over 44 years now. That's right. His first broadcast with Focus on the Family was in May 1977. So congratulations to Dr. Dobson for staying in the field all these years. You know, it's truly amazing. And because of listeners just like you, we don't intend to stop. From Dr. Dobson, his wife Shirley, and everyone here at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute, I'm Roger Marsh. Join us next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
Hi, everyone. Dr. Tim Clinton here. When you think about your family and where they'll be when you're no longer living, are you worried? Are you confident? You hopeful? What kind of a legacy are you leaving for your children and their children right now? Here at Family Talk, we're committed to helping you understand the legacy that you're leaving your family. Join us today at drjamesdobson.org. You're going to find helpful insights, tips, and advice from Dr. Dobson himself. And remember, your legacy matters.